Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lovely.
It's the Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies Podcast.
Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news from the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm Johnny B.
And I'm Johnny Smacks. You're very welcome to Podcast 90, coming to you from the home of glitz and glamour and showbiz. That is, of course, Hollywood, Los Angeles, California. On this week's podcast, we bring you our interview with Des Bishop that would happen at our live podcast in Belfast.
He's Hurling's answer to James Dean. He's a rebel with a cause, and that cause is to absolutely bet the shite out of lads on the hurling field. Noel Furlong will be here with the news.
And as traditional as your granny slipping you cash and telling you not to tell your mother, we round off the podcast with our
Yurts and Dirts
of the Week. And if you're new to the podcast, make sure you go back to the start and listen from episode one. It'll all make much more sense back there. Find out about Conan the dog.
Get back.
And other such great stories. So check that out. Now, before commencing with proceedings, matters arising from last week's podcast.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On the topic of Halloween ghosts and fortune tellers, Harry in Virginia, USA, emailed the podcast to say, I assume that's how he talks. Well, lads.
Half the fucking bag is napkins.
Half the bag is napkins. Long time listener, first time emailer on the topic of ghosts, the supernatural and all that crack. It reminded me of a funny incident that happened when I was working in a pub. We'll decide if it's funny or not, Harry. We used to have a fortune teller who came in and would give psychic readings on a quiet Tuesday or Wednesday evening. People were coming from all over the country to see this guy, and there was always a constant stream of people in and out. So one night, myself and a few other staff are sitting around and the fortune teller joins us. He proceeds to tell us that he can feel a presence in the pub and that he thinks the place could be haunted. Of course, we're not buying it, except for one girl who works there. She says she can also feel the presence. So anyway, a few weeks pass and I think no more about it. Then one day I'm filling an ice bucket from the ice machine. It's located in a room in a part of the pub that we never use. For some reason, there's a mannequin in the room. And I decided I'd have an old bit of crack with the girl who could feel the presence of a ghost. So I position the mannequin in such a way that it is standing in the room. And then I take out the light bulb. Late at night, I send that girl down to get more ice. And she reluctantly goes. Well, as you can imagine, she lost her mind when she walked into the room and seen the outline of a person standing there. You could hear her screaming from the main bar. Fun times. As for the psychic, he stayed doing readings for a bit longer. But then one day he got hit by a car while crossing the road. Didn't see that coming. I don't think he was too badly hurt. And it was funny. Oh, and Harry, bye.
Harry, in fairness, that was funny. I wonder how that girl is now. She's probably petrified of mannequins for life. She can't go to Next or Boots or anything.
Mannequins are freaky, man.
Yeah, man, they are. They are.
Fuck mannequins. I hate them. They're up there with snakes for me now.
I'll get on to that. Calum? Calum emailed to say that is strange way of spelling Calum.
Go on.
Anyway, bit of a freaky and long story for you on the topic of all things spooky. It sounds a bit far-fetched and hard to believe. And if I didn't witness it, I wouldn't believe it myself. A couple of years ago when I was in college, on one rare night, myself and the lads decided not to go out and stayed in. One of them decided he would go into the Escorts Ireland website and start calling a few of the women.
Nice.
He'd ring them up and just take the piss out of them. Don't be wasting their time. He was asking her things like, how much would she charge to foot his turf or to clean out his slatted shed? When she stopped him and called him by his name, he replied, yes, wait. How do you know my name? He hasn't told her his name. Then she went on to say she was so sorry for his loss that he had lost someone very close to him. He whispered to us that his uncle had died a few months beforehand. Now, by the accent of the woman, it wasn't hard to tell she wasn't a local to the island of Ireland. So there wasn't much way she'd know his name, never mind that the lad's uncle from Donegal had died. After that, she started to shout down the phone, telling him to go to the doctors immediately, that he was sick and was in great danger. She then let out the most spine-tingling, high-pitched cackle of a laugh, and at that point, we all got freaked out. So he hung up the phone. Half an hour later, she rings him back and just keeps making the same cackle down the phone. So he hung up again. She kept on ringing him back, but we were shitting it, so he didn't answer. About 5 minutes later, she stopped ringing. The following week, the lad ended up getting the mumps, and we were all certain it was the crazy prostitute that was warning him about the mumps. Honestly, lads, if I wasn't there myself, I wouldn't believe it. But this is 100% true. A wow. psychic prostitute. Just when you thought this podcast couldn't get any crazier.
She's an escort, not a prostitute, okay? There's a distinction.
We'd probably cut that out.
But like, he was trolling, and she started trolling him back.
She did right too. Ringing her, asking her to foot the turf.
She rang him back saying he was going to die. Ah, top banter.
That is
from the escort there. She got him.
Top banter from Shiniqua.
Showed you, Kaelin.
Kaelin? Spelt weirdly.
Barry. Good old
Barry. A good strong name, Barry.
Good five letter name there. Barry says, have an old scale for you on the topic of horror films and search. When I was about 17, my parents went away to France for the week. While they were gone, I had some friends over to watch a film one night, and we watched Paranormal Activity.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I love old horror films, and I'm a big fan of the likes of Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and so on. But ghosts, I can't cope with. We watched the film anyway, and it was so scary for me that I completely freaked out and had somewhat of a panic attack. Not long after this, we ran out of snacks. Luckily, there was a garage down the road about 5 minutes of a walk away. So everyone decided at 3:30 in the morning, we'll walk down to the shop. I wasn't arsed going, but given the fact that I had nearly died watching the film and there was absolutely no way I was going to be left in the house on my own, we all left through the front door and soon as the door closed, it dawned on me that we couldn't get back in. I had locked the back door and left the keys inside. Panic set in and we were completely locked out and it wasn't very warm. We then spent the next 2 hours trying to break into my own house while some of them got into the girl's car. Unfortunately, she left the lights on and the car soon died. Ah, for God's sake, Barry! Leaving them all freezing and raging at being locked out of the house. As I panicked, my old pair were never really ones for any of this sort of crack and I knew that they'd flitter me if they found out I had gone and had people over while they were away. So I thought the best thing to do would be go down to my dad's best friend, who was only down the road, and see if he had any spare keys for emergencies. I went and knocked on the door with one of the lads. This is at 5 a.m. now.
Oh, God.
His wife stuck her head out the window in a panic, wondering what was going on, and I had explained that I'd locked us out of the house, wondering had they spare keys or knew what to do. So my dad's mate came down anyway and left us in. I explained the situation, telling him there was about 8 of us back at the house in a broken down car, absolutely dying of hypothermia, and that we didn't know what to do. He thought for a second and then finally said, right, sit down. We'll figure this out. He stuck on the kettle, put on tea for the two of us so we could properly talk him through the situation. It's not that complicated, like Jesus. We're locked out. When we finally had the tea drank, he drove us back down to mine to see if we could break into the house, but to no use. And eventually we decided my dad had to be phoned to see if there was a spare key hidden anywhere to see what we could do. Unfortunately, there was no spare key and we decided we'd have to break the window to get in and I'd have to pay for a replacement. The window was broke and we were all saved. And to this day, about 10 years later, my mother and father still go on about how I ruined their holiday. And it was even brought up at my wedding in August. All this could have been avoided if we had watched something normal instead of Paranormal Activity. Okay, I thought that was going to be crazier. But I also have to say, I like his dad's best friend who's like, right, okay, hang on. You're all dying of hypothermia. Should we have tea anyway?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. that was definitely the high point of that.
We'll have the tea anyway.
Emer was in touch and said, don't believe all this fortune telling stuff. We were talking about that in last week's podcast. She said she got her cards read and it said romance was around the corner for her. That same week she got stood up and is still single a year later. It's all pure shite, she says.
Well, Emer, maybe you shouldn't be so fucking negative.
Come on, Emer, positive vibes.
Yeah, no, we're sure Emer's an absolute catch. Lads, get your act together. Get on Emer there.
not literally.
Give her a shout. So we have a message from Dan. Dan, regarding your recent podcast about whether mediums, fortune tellers, psychics, etc. are real, the James Randi Foundation offers $1 million to anyone who can display supernatural powers of any kind under scientific observation. So far, it's existed for over 20 years and not one person has ever passed the first phase of testing. It's weird that psychics continue to take people's small change instead of claiming the $1 million if they are real. The most infamous technique psychics use is called cold reading. Darren Brown has shown in many documentaries how easy it is to do, and self-proclaimed psychics scam people. Dan is not happy. And you're a fan of Darren Brown and his cold reading.
Yeah, Darren Brown is class. And cold reading, I guess, you know, to simplify it, it's kind of reading people's, not their minds, but their kind of mannerisms, the way they act and stuff like that. I reckon Irish mothers are experts at cold reading. You know, so did you break that window? And if you even flicker, they know what that sign means.
Okay, but this is gas. So you walk up to somebody and just say, "Oh, I'm getting a presence in the room. Someone belonged to you is left footed," mm-hmm. and you walk. You just watch that person's reaction to see whether you're onto the right track or not.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cold reading.
And they reckon if people are lines, I think it's their eyes move to their left or something.
Can guards not learn that? Like,
yeah, but I don't think it stands up in court.
Your Honor, he twitched.
He definitely robbed the bank. His eyes moved to the left. We've got a bra story.
Yeah, no, my ma can definitely cold read. Tell you that. No, there's no getting past her. Go on, she's got bras too. On we go.
Ian in Dublin said, catching up on her last few podcasts, and on Maura's mystery topic on bras, I have a short story for you. When I was 17, I was working in a well-known retailer who shall remain nameless. I worked in the food section and was a bit outgoing, so got called into the general manager's office and got asked, did I fancy taking part in a trial role over Christmas? I would be a stocking fella and would help men buy lingerie for their partners.
Oh, shit.
I'd love to know what shop that is in. I think it was Mr. Mark's idea, or maybe Mr. Spencer's. Well, that's explained it. I'm not too sure.
Quinsworth it is.
The whole plan was a man would come in and I'd need to suss out was he a pervert or buying a nice Christmas present for his wife, girlfriend, and then approach him and ask a few questions. Do you know her size? What colour? What style? In retrospect, I was probably the pervert. Anyway, the best part of the job was I received training from the sizing team on how to roughly tell girls' bust size from look. This is a skill that came in handy every time the brother would chat up a girl and call me over saying, "Here, Ian, what size is she?" I'd then stare at the twins for a couple of seconds and shout out, 34C or whatever. And lads, I was never wrong. Girls would be shocked. They'd think I'm a fucking weirdo and ride a brother, but at least something was gained from it. The idea turned out to be a success, and I must have been fairly good because I got asked to do it again in February for Valentine's Day. And that comes in from Ian, the tit expert in Dublin.
Yeah, never mind cold reading. Ian has a skill there, man. Yeah. He's the Dern Brown of Baps. I also like Marks and Spencers are like, my job was to find out, was this guy a pervert or buying a present for his wife? Like, what does it matter?
It doesn't matter. They were definitely still taking his money.
Yeah.
Regardless. So.
It's not like you're buying that loaf of bread. Well, what are you doing with it?
You going home making toast? You sure?
You making love to that bread?
Cold reading on bread.
Yeah, that's. I don't think you should have to vet people. Let them buy what they want in the shop. Okay, anyway. A rollover down under. Aye, aye. Josh got in contact to say, "Hey lads, I'm currently 700 kilometers deep in the bush."
Oh,
in
shit. Fucking, that's a big bush, man.
Oh, shit. Where's Ian and his brother now, huh?
They're in the bush as well, lad.
What size is the bush? 700 kilometers. Where does the bush start? How do you know you're 700 kilometers into it?
The bush is it's not an actual bush.
Yeah, I know, but is there like, where's the starting point? Is he like, right, now I'm in town, now I'm in the bush?
Yeah, but like, you know, there's like, you would consider Camaros and places like that the bush of Leash, you know, so.
Yeah.
I guess that's where they're getting it from.
Anyway, he's working on a cattle station. It's 1 million acres of cattle. Wow.
Wow.
He said, I had a few close calls with brown snakes, death adders, and crocodiles, even getting thrown over an 8-foot railing by a bull. But the closest call so far happened last week while driving to check waters in the desert. How are they farming in the desert? Like?
Wow.
Give it up, lads, will you?
Tell you, farmers give out here like if they don't get a bit of rain. This fella's operating in a desert.
Fucking desert. I managed to roll the car in thick sand on a bad corner. Next thing I knew, I was upside down listening to Noel talk about his missing sheep. It definitely made light of a bad situation as I climbed out the windscreen. So cheers. I would buy the boss a few cans as an apology, but I'm 4 hours from the nearest off license, and it's probably best not to ask for a lend of the car. A mug might do anyway. I'm grand after it. See you in Sydney, and if you fancy sail around the harbour on the Grey Goose, the uncle is always up for bringing visitors around for a spin. We'll go as long as you're not driving. Yeah.
And he's attached a picture of the Grey Goose, which I'm guessing is the boat here, and it's not a giant bottle of vodka that sails on the sea.
Yeah, I'd take him up on that 100%. And his Jeep is absolutely totaled.
On Johnny B's Pinocchio theory from last week, which a week later I still can't get my head around. Craig was in touch and he said, I'm driving back to Kerry yesterday after being best man at a wedding. After two very long, hard but enjoyable days and a drink, I said I'd listen to your podcast on the drive home to try and get rid of my fear. It was working until your Pinocchio theory made my brain explode. My hangover went from almost being cured back to stage one. Craig, I have a headache for the last week thinking about it as well. You're better off to move on from this.
The Pinocchio paradox.
And learn from this. So who's going to get the Nozoo's mug kindly sponsored by HairyBaby.com? Johnny B, who's going to get it? I'm kind of rooting for the bra story.
Yeah,
I think that's funny.
Rooting for the bra guy as well.
You know, that is definitely one of the oddest jobs we've ever heard. You know, guessing girls' bra sizes and Marks and Spencers. You know, do you go to college for that? I don't know, but Ian in Dublin, I think unanimously.
Yeah,
he's the winner of this week's Noel's News mug. So Ian, if you just email podcast@thetwojohnnies.ie with all your details, Maura will get on to you, and the mug will be sent in the next. Wild. 2 to 3 years probably. The weekly roundup. What's been going on in Two Johnny's land this week? We were in, like, we're in LA recording this.
Yeah, because we've got a show this weekend.
Yeah, so we were really enjoying the LA lifestyle.
You yourself and Connor Sketches got a convertible Mustang.
Yeah. Don't be telling people that, man. They'll be like,
we just rented it. You didn't buy it.
Yeah. Exactly. We rented it.
Well, Connor rented it. We owe him a few pounds, but you know, yeah. It's like
he's doing better than us, man. He's on MTC. So our friend and the entertainer Connor Sketches, the impressionist, so he works with NBC, the Golf Channel, and he does all the stuff at home. Everybody probably knows him this stage, but he's out here with us because he's our special guest for our Hollywood podcast.
Yeah.
And he's living with us as well, and we're just having some crack. He's some funny man. He hasn't stopped talking since he got here.
At this moment, we can see him out the window. He's in a jacuzzi.
He's in a jacuzzi at the moment. We're looking out the window, listening to a podcast, which isn't ours, but he's a gas man. And can I just say one funny story with Connor quick?
Go on.
We were coming home the other night from when we were out for a few drinks.
Yeah.
And this Uber taxi driver picked us up. That obviously had a clue who I was and didn't know who Connor was either. And we're in the back of the taxi, and James is with us as well, our tour manager. And we're heading home in this Uber, and Connor starts doing Trump. He starts doing his Donald Trump impression. He's like, you are the best taxi driver I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And your man's like, dude, that's good, man. That's good. And then he starts doing a load of other people, Matthew McConaughey and all this. Your man has to pull over the car and take his inhaler. He's dying laughing. Connor's cracked the taxi driver up. And then just as we're getting out, he's like, man, you should do that for a living. Connor was like, cheeky fucker. Close the door. But that's what
we went up to the Hollywood sign.
Mm.
It's a funny one, right? So if you just type it into Google or whatever, you know, Google Maps, it'll bring you to the Griffith Observatory.
Yeah.
That is not the best place to see it. The thing about the Hollywood sign is that it's kind of in a neighborhood. Like, yeah, all the houses around it are rich fuckers. So they don't want you cruising around their neighborhood because they're little windy roads. The roads are terrible.
The roads are dour. They're absolute. Like,
it's like the bog of Kildare, bog of Allen Job.
And the strange thing is, like the people living up there drive huge Jeeps.
Mm.
Like, you'd want something small, a nice little narrow car to navigate up there, like.
But, and it was really nice. It was nice to see the Hollywood sign.
It was, to be honest, I enjoyed it. And you know I hate sightseeing.
Yeah.
But the fact it was 30 degrees and I was getting a tan at the same time, you know, I'll save on Sally Hansen in the long run. So. No, so I did. I enjoyed seeing that. I really did.
So the Hollywood sign originally said Hollywood Land.
Yeah.
Because your man was, this real estate developer put it up to try and sell houses. And then when it was getting dilapidated and they wanted to replace it, he just left out the land and just put up Hollywood.
Yeah. People fell for it. Yeah. Start building expensive houses up there now.
We should do it. I swear to God, lad. Up to Glen of Aherlow. Just get like... The Glen or Tip. The Tip sign. And then, lo and behold, one of our favourite singers, Irishman Dermot Kennedy, was doing like an intimate gig in a record shop.
It's the strangest way it came about. So my missus texted me and was like, oh, I just seen this yoke on the internet that Dermot Kennedy's doing a free gig in LA, and sent on the address. And I was like, oh, we're probably might, because everything's far away in LA.
LA is massive.
And I just put this place into Google Maps, and it was 5 o'clock. He was doing the gig at, and this was like 10 minutes to five. And I was like, oh, we're probably fucking an hour away.
Yeah.
We were 6 minutes away.
Yeah.
We drove there, parked the car, walked in into this record store, and here's Dermot Kennedy in there singing away. It's really small, intimate crowd. It was like he was in a little sitting room with us. It was mad. He was class. Well.
Sorry, Connor, put some pants on. Yeah, Dermot Kennedy, he only sang about 5 songs, right?
Mm.
But this is at like 5 o'clock in the evening. Just him and a pianist.
Yeah.
He was class.
He's so good. I felt really emotional.
Everyone around us felt emotional too, man. It was communal.
I was crying into James's arms. So.
There was loads of couples, you know, doing that kind of standing up spooning thing that people do at shit gigs. It's like, you know. But he was really good. And then that was it.
Yeah. It was that good. We just left then.
But see, if this is in Ireland, like a load of people actually bought his record and CD right afterwards, and we're waiting to get him to sign it and all that. If it was in Ireland, people would be like, I'm not buying a CD, fuck that.
Yeah, I'm going home now after getting a free gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, fair play to everyone. So Dermot, if you're listening, the reason we didn't queue up and buy your record and get you to sign it was you didn't reply to a couple of Instagrams we sent you, and also we can't bring that record home in a suitcase. It'd be broken.
Look, fair is fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, right back. And we'll see what we can do. We might buy one.
JB, talking about LA, you're loving the organic shops around here. You're really going around like the happy pair. All you're missing is a hemp jumper now at this point.
So we're out here in Venice, and there is an organic food shop that is like nothing I've ever seen. The food is amazing.
Yeah.
It's like everything has a story. Like the turkey, like its name is nearly written on the box that, you know, it used to be. This is where its habits, its hobbies and interests. But it's very expensive.
Yeah.
There's a 2-liter bottle of water in a glass bottle in the fridge, and it's $25 for this bottle of water. It's got added oxygen, and they say it'll cure any hangover in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Now, we haven't tried it yet because we won't pay the €25. We'd rather just battle through the hangover.
No way. We'd chance a fry up, lad. Yeah. A cup of tea.
100% good salty old rasher.
And it's pronounced Ophera.
Yeah.
Ophera or something like that. Yeah,
check it out.
We're debating it. If we get really hungover in the next few days,
we'll try it.
We'll try it.
Also, here it's gas. We went down to Venice Beach, and there's like guys selling CDs. Now, I didn't know they were selling them, so I walked down with James. We were going playing tennis, and I wanted to go down and try and hustle lads, because like, do you know, I haven't played tennis in around 10 years, but I reckon, you know, Wimbledon next year, maybe. But we're walking down, and this guy comes over and puts a CD in my hand, and he's like, there you go, dude. And I was like, oh, thanks, man. He's like, no, it's a donation. I was like, oh, well, I don't have any money. I just came down to play tennis. Like,
I came down to win money.
And I was like, look, like, I'll see you on the way out. I'll have money then. And I was thinking, like, this place is massive. He's never going to find me. He found me. And he's like, yo, King Johnny, man, the CD. And I was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, yeah, man, we can't get a deal with a big label, you know. So we just passing it out this way. I was like, cool. It was a tiny CD, one song on it, like. Burnt onto the CD.
One song?
Yeah, one song.
Oh, miserable bastard.
And then he was like, just a donation. I was like, grand. Give him $5. Like.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, a donation. I was like, it's one fucking song. You can download our song for 99 cent, lad. Do you know what I mean? Don't be getting lippy with me. So I ended up getting 2 CDs for a tenner. James took a CD as well. So.
Is this the lad you were telling me he was on a soundtrack there?
He told Tommy he was on the soundtrack of Coach Carter. To be honest, I couldn't tell if he was or not. I just wanted him to get away from me. So I was like, yeah, cool. There you go. Give me the CD. Listen to it.
Can I go? Did you?
Yeah. Shite.
Is it?
Yeah. Listen to it in the car.
Can I go slightly off track and ask you? You told me a story the other day about the first time you ever played tennis in school. Go on. I love this shit. Go on.
I'm deluded in all
sorry,
sport.
Also, possibly the fridge has just started buzzing in the background. Shut up. Sorry. Go on, Johnny.
I'm deluded when it comes to any sport. And I think if I take it up, I will be the best in the world, right? So tennis was no different many years ago. Our primary school were playing in a competition. And like, obviously nobody at the time was playing tennis. Because like, who in Ross Gray, tennis wasn't big.
Because fuck tennis, that's yeah, why.
But we used to play it on the street. We'd mark it out on the street and play tennis like with no net.
Mm.
So like, we were handy enough at, like a couple of us. And in our school then they were like, does anybody want to take part in the competition? Does anybody play tennis? And I was like, I will. And then your mom
why
like,
just for
because I in my head I was like I'll go and win this competition. It was like a county competition or something. I just was like I'll whip them. I'm class of street tennis. I assume it's the same on a big court. So like rocked on the day of the competition anyway, a pair of GA shorts on, and we get to the competition And all the other lads there, like in the under 13 boys, are wearing like proper lawn tennis shoes, white socks. They're like dressed like they're at Wimbledon. They're all in white and stuff.
Dunlop gear.
Yeah. I had a tip jersey on, a pair of GA shorts, and just normal runners, like, you know. And your one was like, the coach who brought me was like, "Where's your racket?" I was like, "I don't own a racket." Like, there was like two lads in Ross Grade a racket at the time. We shared it between everyone. She was like, "You came, you don't have a racket?" I was like, "No." And she was like, "I'll give you a lend of mine." I was like, "Grand job, you throw it over there." Like, went in and hockeyed the first three lads I played. I think I lost in the semi-final or something. I wasn't too far away. I'd never played in a competition, never got a lesson, nothing. Just went up like, I was trying to serve underarm. She was like, "Please, please serve overarm." Street rules, bitch.
Street rules, motherfucker.
Call your own rules. Yeah, so yeah, got to semi-final. That was a nice little story about that. But we also went to a comedy night out here.
Yeah.
So people were messaging us suggestions on places to go, and we checked out this Venice Underground, it's called. It's like a little comedy club. And we went in. To be honest, there was like, I don't know, seven comedians. Five were poor. One guy was decent. And then the last guy came out. They're like, "We're keeping this man all night. He's amazing. You're going to love him." And I was like, "They're talking shite now. It's just going to be another fucking scandalous fella who's like, you know, homeless, thinking he's funny." No, come on. And this guy came out, and I was like, I know him from somewhere.
Yeah.
And Connor was at the bar, and Connor came back and was like, "I know him from somewhere." And Connor was like, "That's your man from The Hangover."
Yeah.
Not Zach Galifianakis, what everyone's thinking. You know the scene in The Hangover when the lads come back to the chapel the next morning and they walk in, your man's like, "Ah, you crazy motherfucker. I thought he was going to eat my dick."
Yeah.
And he's like, "You ain't got no love for Eddie, huh?"
Eddie, huh?
So it's Eddie from The Hangover. He's in loads of films, loads of TV series. And he was the comedian. Brian Callan is his real name. And he done around 20 minutes. He was awesome.
He was
so
amazing.
Funny.
Yeah.
And we met him at the bar afterwards. Then he was like, "I better not say this because he said he's going to come on the podcast. So we might have him on like maybe next week's podcast or something. We're going to try and record an interview with him out there." And he was like, "Dude, I got to get out of here. This fucking barmaid, she loves me." And I was like, "Oh, to be successful."
Then there was a followed up by a burlesque night. So if anyone out there is into burlesque, you might ring us and explain. What the hell? It's like stripping, but it's a bit theatrical.
They try and say it's classy. And what I seen, that like, one girl came out with a gas mask on and took off all her clothes and started gyrating on the floor. And I was honestly, I was standing there like, this had just followed up from a stand-up comedy gig. And it was like, next up, burlesque. I was like, thought it was going to be feathers and everyone's singing all that jazz. It was like Magic, like it was like a filthy version of Magic Mike.
Magic Minge.
Honestly, like Magic Magella. I was standing there looking at Connor going, this can't be real. Like, is this actually happening here? Like,
am I hallucinating?
And people were just firing dollar bills at him. Like, you see that?
Yeah.
Crazy. That's American, man.
I was one of those people.
I was wondering why you had no money left the next morning. But that was LA, Johnny, and that was like...
Yeah, we're enjoying it so far. We got another few days here after the show, so we'll have more stories for you. Yeah. But LA, it's huge, it's hot, traffic is terrible, all the famous people live here.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
And we're trying to let on, we are. Also, at home, our book is out.
Oh, shit, yeah, buy it.
Dear Johnny's has hit the shelves, and it's selling incredibly well. Thanks so much to everyone who bought it. Of course, I've said it again, it's a like self-help book for everybody.
But and funny.
It's funny, yeah. Don't take any advice literally, because you will end up in a lot of trouble.
We got a couple of messages of people saying that it's already sold out in their local bookstore.
That's some crack, isn't it?
Some fuck. If you go in.
We're so happy. Like.
If you go in and they don't have it, you need to go up there and say, "Look, I'm going to kick the shit out of you if you don't give me this book."
And message us, and then we'll get our manager to ring them and fucking hate the shit out of them. Yeah. Right?
So we don't advise that you actually throw slaps in a bookshop, but you know, make a bit of a fuss.
Throw a couple of shapes anyway, like
yeah. You know, and so. If you do get into a brawl, you know, get some photos, let us know. We'll get it in the newspapers.
Yeah,
100%. It's all good press.
It's all good press. So look, if you haven't bought it, go and buy it. We'd be delighted if you did. If you have bought it, we love you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And or else, you know, go into the bookshop and stand there and read a bit of it and then see do you like it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. We recommend it. It's frowned upon, but everybody does it. Also, our live podcast dates in Australia are selling really well. We're coming to Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney. Check out the2johnnies.ie.
In January.
For all that info. Yeah. Enjoy. All right, sit back and strap yourself in. A couple of weeks ago, we done a live podcast gig in Belfast in Elmwood Hall, and our special guest that night was Des Bishop. And right now, here it is, the madness that occurred that night. It is, of course, Des Bishop.
Our guest tonight is a native of New York who arrived into Ireland in the mid-1990s. Since then, he's done work experience in Abracadabra. He's moved to the Gaeltacht to become fluent in Irish, and he lit up the dance floor on Dancing with the Stars. He's also become one of Ireland's most popular comedians. Please go wild and crazy for the one and only Des Bishop.
Yup, 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 yup. Come on out, Des. All right, all right.
All right. Hello, everyone. How are you? It's great.
They're fucking mental.
They're great. Belfast crowds are always mental, you know?
Yeah, crazy. Hey, it's great to have you here. Thanks very much,
thank
man.
Thank you for having me.
You don't know what you just let yourself in for.
Look at this, yeah. There? See, we've come from...
Oh my God.
You've come from the stand-up. We've come from... We're them two pricks off the internet.
I know. I'm jealous of you guys. I wish I had all this technology when I was your age and I was motivated. I used to come up to the Empire every Tuesday night. You know, no motorway, no toll bridge, you know, no bridge Andrada that looks like a woman standing up. You know, and it's just such a different time, man. It's great. All these young people, they're having a fucking clue who I am. It's great. Next generation, I'm coming for you.
But you started doing it. I follow you on Instagram now. There's some good stuff, man.
Oh, that I'm doing the content?
Yeah, you're doing good content.
No fucking
now.
Choice. I like money. You're not going to get any money out of RTE. You get more money off Instagram.
Motherfuckers.
Do you think social media has changed the game, though? Do you think, like, Irish people are fucking... Everybody seems to be obsessed with it now. They're constantly on their phones, like. Is it a fucking eating people alive, this social media?
I mean, whatever, man. It's just life changes and, you know, there's nothing you can do. I don't have, like, a strong opinion on it, you know. We're young people nowadays. They're never off their phones. Yeah. And sure, they're never going to have any sense of their spirit.
It's like, well, you were fucking on your phone and you're a bitter cunt. Yeah. So it didn't work out for you, all this fucking... mindfulness that you forced upon yourself with no distractions.
Sounds like my fucking mother there.
Sorry, I'm only kidding, by the way.
Oh, man.
No, she's a cunt.
I wasn't talking about your mom.
No, I'm only now.
How old's your mother?
She's 50, 52.
Are your parents still together? No, I'm only kidding.
No, she's Aussie too.
She's Aussie.
Yeah, she's Aussie. Right? She's fucking Aussie.
Aussie to get along with, yeah. Fucking hell, man.
Sorry, yeah, took it there. Took
you
it
were
there.
A difficult child, to be fair, I'd say.
Yeah, I was a horrible child, to be honest. Like, I was actually just went home for my mum's birthday the other day, and she was like, do you remember the time you broke up the shed? And I was like, oh, yeah. And she was like, yeah, because we wouldn't let you go to that barn dance. I was like, I was a fucking bastard. Yeah. Literally.
Wouldn't let you go to a barn dance.
A barn dance, yeah. How very country of me.
But, man, we wanted to ask you about coming to Ireland and all. Everyone knows you, Des Bishop, from New York. How the fuck did you end up in Wexford?
Yeah, so for those that know nothing about my past, I got kicked out of school when I was 14, Flushing, Queens. And why I got kicked out of there was for a 14-year-old had a serious problem with alcohol.
Right.
So my mother had this ingenious idea to send me to Ireland to go to boarding school. And needless to say, I was fucking delighted. I could think of no better place for a young alcoholic to be than I. Maybe they saw the potential in my alcoholism and thought, let's make him the best possible alcoholic he could be. So they sent me to the major leagues, baby.
You got a promotion.
It didn't work out, man. I stopped drinking at 19. I said I was an alcoholic in Ireland. They said I was a pussy. Couldn't take it. But I never drank again. Which this summer I was 24 years sober. 24
wow.
years, yeah.
Wow, fair play.
Thank you. That's a young... Now, this is evidence. This is evidence that this is a younger generation of a crowd. Because my next joke is how when I say that in America, audiences always applaud. But when I say it in Ireland, they're like, you're not fucking AA, is it? like it's ISIS. Ireland's the only country in the world where when you go to an AA meeting, there's people protesting outside. They're brainwashing you. It's only a phase. That's great. Well, this is, you know what was is great? You got so many young people here. You've never fucking seen my shit before because that joke is 22 years old. That joke is around as long as I'm sober.
Fucking hell. But what are your thoughts on alcohol now, like? I mean...
I don't drink it, but I think it's great if people can drink responsibly. Fucking happy days.
Because you made a show on TV, Under the Influence.
Under the Influence, yeah.
Yeah.
That was just like a look at Ireland's relationship with alcohol. And then, you know, I guess like... How much Ireland's identity is tied into booze.
Yeah.
But that's online. You can watch that on YouTube.
Yeah, you drove up Harcourt Street. I'll always remember that. Like, people are like, way out in front of a car. Like, I think Irish people think that's fucking... Now, in fairness, like, we were there.
Yeah. That was the start of their career. Yeah. It went viral. The fucking Johnny was there like, you fucking wanker! Fuck! I thought you were a taxi, you cunt!
And we haven't been on RT since.
A lot of people get into my cars.
Yeah. 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 Well, driving up there, like.
No, you know, like, because I'm designated Desi. You know, I can always drive home because I drink. So I do, I'm not going to lie, I actually like driving down Harcourt Street sometimes. Like, at the end of the night, I'll do, like, a Harcourt Street loop, you know, just to, you know, whatever. Perv. And can I, is that okay? And anyway, it's fine, you know, it's not nothing disgusting. And so I drive down sometimes just to catch the crack. And sometimes if I'm, like, stuck in a bit of traffic, people will get in and be like, are you free? And I'm like, this is... No.
Well, yes.
Are you free? Depends.
And then sometimes they're like, oh, fuck off. And then other times they're like, is that fucking Des Bishop? Yeah, and then I give them a lift home for the crack, for the content.
For the content.
Oh, but you've done so much stuff on TV. Like, do you have a highlight of it? Was it working in Abracadabra? Was it, like, dealing with fucking kids in South Hill in Limerick, like, when it was fucking... grim, like, to be honest.
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, honestly, a couple of the highlights of my In the Name of the Father was probably a highlight, like, in terms of, like, Irish stuff that I did. For those that maybe you guys don't know, but I spent a year in the Connemara Gaeltacht to learn the Irish language to do stand-up comedy in Irish for an audience in Ireland. I mean, I don't know if anybody here has anything against the Irish language because we're in Belfast, but, you know... Fuck off! And I'm joking. I'm fucking joking. I don't want to fucking start a fucking riot here now tonight. Like, you know, I'm fucking taking the piss. Fuck sick. It's a fucking joke, like, you know. And but you know, if there are any Protestants here, I am Irish American, so you know where my fucking sideline is. Anyway, I'm only kidding. But. Nah, it's good to make the young Belfast people laugh because that will be the revenge. So the revenge will be the laughter of our children, said a man once who was hangry.
You went to the Gaeltacht as an adult, so you missed, like, you know, we go kind of when
we're... they're from the fucking south. They didn't even get that joke. They actually don't even know.
I got the joke.
They don't even know. These fucking Mexicans having a fucking clue what I'm talking about. Like, they're having a fucking notion of what I'm on about. Like...
Of
who
course
said that?
We get it.
Who said revenge will be the laughter of our children?
Is that Bobby Sands?
Oh, good, man. Thank God. Yeah. Woo! A lot of pressure there. He's fucking happy you answered it, I'll tell you that.
He's from Ross Grey, man.
Anyway, and also, sorry, I'm kidding there. With my sectarian humor, I apologize. But...
That's a disclaimer as well, all right?
In the Name of the Father was great because it was like it was a deeper thing for me than just, if I'm serious for a second, you know, because when you're American, you come to Ireland, and I always felt Irish, and then Irish people tell you, you're not Irish, you're American, but obviously there's a part of you that is, and that's for Irish Americans understand that. Americans can't understand what it's meant to, what it is to be Irish from Ireland, but Irish people can't understand that sense of displacement and a need to feel like you're connected to somewhere. Obviously, people in Belfast, they have more of a connection with Irish Americans because they needed the fucking money, but honestly, I think Belfast people get nervous when I'm around. They think I've come for the money back. But anyway, for me, there was something nice about the language because language is a great identifier, right? Like, what makes a Spanish person Spanish? They speak Spanish, right? So when you start to speak the Irish language, you feel actually a little bit more of a connection to Ireland. So that was a deeper thing for me. But then in terms of like just like sheer performance, when we translated Jump Around into Irish, which is just like a fun thing to do. Mm. And we performed it a few times, which was great. But at the Oireachtas na Gaeilge, I guess it was 2007, that was the first time we kind of outed ourselves as the project that we were doing, and the place went fucking mental. Like, it was really, like, insane, and I just thought, wow, this is incredible. Like, Irish language, hip-hop, the country that I love, all going fucking mental. It was really, like, a happy moment, you know?
Fucking fair play to you, man. That's a brilliant...
You went to the Gaeltacht, like, as an adult. When we go, we're, like, you know, 14, 15, and you just try and... shift and Kaylee dance. So I'd love to go back as an adult, like, and I mean, what you done for the Irish language at that time?
Be careful who you shift, just so you know. You know, they get nervous when a bishop is around a bunch of teenage women. guys, my name is Bishop. I'm allowed to do a fucking... is that controversial?
What, everything that's been said, that's the fucking one that gets you, like.
Yeah, that's the controversial. That's not controversial, just so you know.
You're fucking in trouble for the second half, I'll tell you that. If the Bishop is an issue. But, like, coming from America, like, you're back doing comedy in America now as well.
Yeah, a bit more. I've been back in New York a bit more.
And how do the audiences compare, like, the American audiences to over here?
I mean, they're not that different. I mean, in the sense that, like, you ask any of the Irish comics, and I'm not just trying to endear myself to an Irish audience. Irish audiences are, like, up there in terms of world upfrontness, you know?
Okay.
They really are. And, like, even, like, there's a comedian called Chris DiStefano, a New York guy. He's very like me from Queens. And when he came back from Ireland, he was like, bro, I see why you live there, bro. Those fucking audiences are amazing. You know, like, we literally have the same voice, so I didn't really need to do his voice. But anyway... but I have to say that the New York crowds are pretty good too, and it's fun to be able to sort of, like, you know, talk about my own childhood in a way that I can't talk about here because I grew up there. And it's also fun, like I'll give an example, like a few years ago before Louis C.K. was disgraced, I had to follow Louis C.K. while Dave Chappelle was standing in the doorway waiting to go on.
Fuck.
So I'm nervous about following Louis C.K., but I also know that Dave Chappelle is watching me, you know, at the Comedy Cellar. So that there's an excitement, you know, about that. Yeah. And often I'll sit down at the table and, you know, Chris Rock will be there, Amy Schumer will be there, Sarah Silverman will be there, and they're all just there, and you're just there in the middle of it. So there is an excitement about being in the proximity of what's considered the highest level of the game, you know?
Well, thanks for coming tonight anyway. Yeah.
But I couldn't wait to get back for the two Johnnies, you know?
Fucking, I get nervous when my fucking mother's watching. Jesus Christ.
I get nervous when my mother's watching. Well, she's dead now, but when she was around, I tell you, I was nervous. Fierce, if she was watching me now, I'd be fucking freaked out big time. How the fuck did you get back?
Oh, man. Fuck, I tell you, you've done some crazy gigs. Do you have, like, a worst gig that stands out?
I mean, I've had a lot of fucking bad gigs, man. Well, you know, I did when I did Join the Hood, I actually did I did a month. I lived for a month in Mount Vernon, up in fucking North Belfast, like, you know. And Billy Hutchinson gave me permission. You know, like, you got to get permission from the UVF, and so I had, like, a UVF pass for a month. With my fucking Irish reg car, the fucking kids were all around, and then somebody's like, Billy said he's okay. And so he fucking left me alone for a month, but on the fucking day I was leaving, like, you fucking have one fucking hour, get the fuck out. But it's actually not true. But they were actually nice to me, you know, despite, like, you know, being brought up to think they're the worst people in the world. And no, I was. I mean, whatever, man. Sectarian stuff is very complicated. So Join the Hood was all about, like, stand-up comedy workshops in disadvantaged communities. And one of the communities I wanted to do was a loyalist neighborhood in Belfast, because I literally was brought up to hate them. Like, I'm not going to lie. My mother, the quick version of this story is, one time we were with this family, and these two girls, lovely girls, of like my brother's age, and myself and my mom were sitting with this woman, their mother, and she was Irish to me. She sounded Irish. I can't tell the difference between accents. And my mother talked to her for 15 minutes, and I was listening to the conversation. And when the woman left, I said to my mom, I was like, oh, she was a nice woman. And my mother said, yeah, but she's a Northern Irish Protestant. Oh, I'm sorry, my mother's American. She was like, she's a Northern Irish Protestant. You know, and I was just like, oh, okay, so they're bad. And and I know half the crowd are going, she's just fucking right. But, you know, that's complicated, right?
Quarter of the crowd.
Yeah, so anyway, I was up there. You're in denial. So so anyway, I was up there living in Mount Vernon. And in all the other areas, because the Irish crowds, they knew me, you know? Like, when I would go up, they would be like, yeah. But these loyalists, they didn't know me from a fucking hole in the wall, right? And this is 100% true story. So the night of the gig, I can't remember the name of the pub, but it was on the Shore Road, right? And it was a UVF bar, fucking Rangers shit everywhere. And I'd been in there plenty of times. It wasn't the first time I was there. And this is, like, genuinely a UVF bar. This is not, like, fucking pretending that you're close to the proximity. Like, Billy Hutchinson's in the crowd. He signed the fucking Good Friday Agreement. He has admitted that he killed Catholics in his life. He is, like, he released under the Good Friday Agreement. He's one of these people, right? So I go up on stage, and my opening joke is, because, you know, the Shore Road is next to Tigers Bay, but Tigers Bay and fucking Mount Vernon don't mucks. So my opening joke is, I was like, wow, look at this. I said, fucking, you know, we're in a UVF bar here on the Shore Road, and I'm an Irish-American Catholic performing to a bunch of Protestants in a bar on the Shore Road.
I said, if they had any sense in Tiger's Bay, they'd blow us up now and get two for the price of one. Not the reaction that I got.
No.
Dead fucking silence. And I don't know if it was because they didn't like a Catholic making that joke or that they're so fucking thick they didn't fucking get it. Because IRA prisoners fucking study and they fucking pumped wits. They fucking pumped fucking wits. I'm only joking, by the way.
We survived 85 episodes.
Well, these people survived fucking three generations of pain. They survived the fucking peace specials. What the fuck do you know about it?
I'm so fucking around. It's not fair. It's
we only have the junior
peace specials. I have a degree
in
history. I have a degree in history. I had to fucking use it some way, you know?
I'd say there's going to be a lot of people going to want to buy you a drink tonight. I know you don't drink, but fucking hell.
I'm in Nuri tomorrow night, though, if you know anybody in Nuri, because I know this won't be up. I'm in Nuri tomorrow night. And see, here's the thing. People don't know. My grandfather is John O'Hare from County Down. So my mother was raised by a County Down guy. And, they were very involved, in the whole thing. So I actually grew up, kind of obsessed with the North and always felt like, a bit of a connection to County Down. But my name is O'Hare, So my first name is Desi.
Yeah.
So if it had been the other way around and my dad was the O'Hare, then I would be Desi O'Hare, which is not a great name for your stage name. And but I put that up last week as a little funny video, and this woman messaged me and said, I think that's a good name for you. Desi O'Hare, the Border Silver Fox.
Hey!
There you go. There's a fucking quick joke for you now. All right. But, sorry. I didn't mean to focus. He's not political. We have him on. He's not political. In the Name of the Father, 1994.
So,
he's not political.
So,
the IRA has RJ. Daddy, the IRA has RJ. When you're Irish-American, you have to watch that 23 times.
It's like a rite of passage.
Going out the fucking front door, Jerry. I say that at the end of all my shows. That's how I walk off stage every night in my head. I go, I'm going out the front door, Jerry. And I fucking walk off the stage.
Okay, let's go somewhere a bit quieter.
China.
So, for those who don't know, Dez lived and performed in China for what, a year and a half?
I was making a TV show, which was a year, but then I stayed another year because I actually was so into it. But the TV show part was only a year. And the mission, same as In the Name of the Father, the mission was to learn enough Chinese to do stand-up comedy in Chinese in 1 year, right?
Fuck.
And people said, why? Why would you do that? And because I'd spent a year of my life learning the Irish language, which opened me up to a market of 60,000 people. I said, the next time I'm doing this, I'm fucking going all out. 1.4 billion. So that was called Breaking China. That was also for RT. I don't do anything unless it's getting on fucking telly.
Big money.
And we were just watching, actually, before you came in today, we were watching the video you had up on Instagram, and it was like...
Oh, I'd love to put that up right now. Because these motherfuckers would like it.
How do we not think of that?
I know.
It was like... A Chinese version of Take Me Out.
It was a Chinese version of Take Me Out. Yeah.
And do you want to tell people what you did for your party piece on Chinese television?
Well, actually, what happened was they had said to me, "Can you perform stand up on the show?" They wanted me to do they actually ask you to do your party piece. That's like a part of all the guys, the jobbing, the guys that are up trying to woo these women. So right up until just before the show. I think I was just going to do jump around in English or something. I can't remember what I was going to do, but then it hit me that I would tell them that I was going to sing a serious traditional Irish song. So they were like, what's your thing? And I said, So I said, I want to sing a traditional Irish song. And, then I said to the crowd, I was like, So can the crowd give me, I don't have any Irish music to accompany me. So can the crowd give me just like a fast clap? And then the crowd started clapping. And then I said,
Well, I come out your black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show you eyes how you won medals down in Flanders, and how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lakes of Killeshan.
Live on Chinese television.
Now, you want to tell me it's one quarter now, motherfucker? Fuck, see, you know your fucking audience.
You said it was one half.
Know where you fucking are, mate.
So did you get a date?
On that show, I didn't get a date. Because honestly, on that show, first of all, we were still filming for the documentary, right? And they gave us permission to use the footage. So obviously that joke was for Irish people, right? Yeah. But there was just a lot of funny moments on it. And that was really great. Like, that was really a highlight for me of that project, because you got to understand something. I literally had been learning Chinese for 12 months. That was literally like, I think it was like the day before my director was leaving. It was our final thing. And doing stand-up in Chinese was actually less of an achievement with that, because when you're doing stand-up, you can prepare your performance, right? But now I'm like talking to these MCs and stuff. And it was just great, because first of all, the MCs were fantastic, because obviously there's a certain skill to them realizing my language level and still being able to bring the best out of me, which, you know, you guys are great at. That's a skill that broadcasters have, right? So they were great, and just going back and forth with them was great. And then, like, some of the women were trying to speak English, and it was like, one of them was like, you are very, handsome, and you are very rich, and you are so toilet. She wanted to say tall, and she said toilet, you know? And it was just like all these funny moments, and it was great. But then I stayed in China, and not for the documentary. I went on Fei Zhong Rao, which is actually the most popular show in China. Like 300 million people watch it.
Wow.
Like 300 million people watch. And I got a girl on that. But when I first walked out, just on your looks, 24 women either decide if they want to stay in for you or not. And if 22 or more of the women leave their lights on, then you have a chance to win a trip to the Maldives or to Greece.
Right.
Nice. Right? So when I walked out, 23 women left their lights on. So now I have a chance to win a trip to Greece. But I have to win. I have to get a woman.
Yeah.
But when the announcer said, 23 out of 24, that's good. I said, you think it's good? I want to know who was the one fucking girl that didn't put her lights on, right? So he said, why didn't you pick it? And she said, I'd be worried that our children wouldn't be Chinese.
Oh, my God.
So you can be sure there is no political correctness in China whatsoever. So I didn't say this at the time, but in my mind, I thought, well, I'd be worried our children would be racist. So it's going to work out fine. It's going to work out fine.
Come on, that's fine. That's good stuff.
Oh, you've got your own podcast now, Des.
I got a new podcast now called The Shift, which is like an Irish... Oh, really? Wow. I'm surprised. But it's like an Irish sex and dating podcast. It's really like a sex and dating podcast for Catholics, like people that were brought up with a lot of shame around sex, like, you know. It's
all under the covers kind of stuff, yeah?
It's great, man. It's actually great. It's great. You get great feedback. And, like, no matter how many people are listening, I mean, it gets a lot more female listeners. I'd like guys to listen to. I mean, it is very much, it's more geared towards women in the sense that, I guess, like, the female body is a lot more complicated. Like, guys are really fucking easy, you know? Like, I always say, like, with a woman, you need a GPS, you know? Because every time you get on a new woman, it's a whole new fucking set of directions, you know? Whereas with a guy, you don't need a fucking GPS. It's like the M1. Get on it, don't get off it, you're in Belfast. It's really fucking simple. You know? You fucking stay on it long enough, you're gonna fucking get there. It's as simple as that. Whereas women, it's a lot of fucking, you know, if a dog barks, you know, a lot can go wrong. So, it's kind of, but men should listen to it to learn more. It's good. It is good crack, but that is very new. But I also have the Des Bishop podcast, which has been dormant. But I am getting that. Literally tomorrow, I'm starting to get that back up and running. But I am going to do it with a partner, because that's the thing. I tried to do the Des Bishop podcast on my own, and it is a pain in the hole. And as you guys know, it's easier with a partner. So I'm going to get that back up and running, just literally because it's mostly just women listening to The Shift. So I feel like I just want to talk about stuff that guys will listen to too. So I'm going to get the Des Bishop podcast back up and running. But for you guys, you should definitely, young people in the crowd, you should definitely listen to The Shift. It's good. It's good fun. And Katie, my partner, Katie Boyle, at Katie Boyle Comic, she's very new in comedy and at sex.
She's very fresh.
But you've shown her, so it's...
she literally didn't know that she could touch herself until she went to the States. Like, she was just like, her American friends were like, fucking just have a go at yourself. You can make yourself come. She was like, I didn't know. I thought that was off limits to everybody except... my future husband.
And you're also on tour at the moment. Where can people find out where you are?
You're on desbishop.net/tour dates. It used to be desbishop.com. I lost the .com. Long story. People always make fun of me for being .net, but
yeah,
whatever.
Man, you gotta get
desbishop.net/tour dates. And I'm in Cookstown, County Tyrone next week as well.
All right.
Oh, great. So spread the word about that, because there are some tickets left for that, because I'm not fucking huge in the North, which is shocking, because I'm one of the only fucking comics from the South that gives a fuck about you guys, to be honest with you. The rest of them don't give a fucking shit. So, anyway.
On that absolute bombshell, lads, can you please give a massive round of applause? He's been absolutely class. Des Bishop.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, he's about as at home in Hollywood as a vegan is in an abattoir. It's time for Noel Furlong, and it's time for Noel's News! Noel's News! It's Noel's News! Well, Noel, how are you? How are you enjoying life in California?
It's grand, yeah. I teamed up with a few lowriders there.
The cars?
Yeah, a few of them bios driving around out in Crenshaw.
Out in Crenshaw?
Ah, yeah. They're a good old crowd. Uncle of mine started a GA club there in the 60s.
Go away.
A-Rogue Crenshaw. Or did a wicked rivalry with Compton.
Did they?
Oh, Compton St. Thomas's, yeah.
Compton St. Thomas.
They wouldn't be as strong anymore, actually. They had to amalgamate with Long Beach Shamrocks.
Okay.
They had to join up, but...
Who was playing for Compton? Anyone?
I wouldn't be up to speed on the Compton boys now, but okay. I know Ice-T was on the committee of Crenshaw for a long time.
Okay.
He's Crenshaw through and through.
Wow.
I know, he's a good old lad, Ice-T. He done a fundraiser with us one time. All the hits. New Jack Hustler, Six in the Morning, Cop Killer. And Mr. Chairman wasn't gone on that one now.
Was he not?
KKK, Bitch, Squeeze the Trigger, G-Style. Okay. All the
big ones.
We had a great night.
That's good, that's good.
I have a bit of news for you.
Great. Only you could get a chest infection in LA.
You have the old vest on, not too bad. I'm the only man in California wearing a thermal vest.
And a leather jacket. It's 30 degrees out here.
Did you catch an old chill? No, the wind did cut you.
Oh, God.
Now, news this week. We are talking about rock. Big rock. Now, not Rock Guthrie, our GA club's most reckless wing forward, with total disregard for personal safety. He'd put his hand in places he wouldn't put your mother-in-law, this man, right? And I'm not talking about rock and roll star Dickie Rock.
Okay.
He's getting old now. He must be nearly Dickie Sand. He's been eroded away.
Dickie Pebble.
Dicky Pebble, huh? Spitting me Dicky. He said, well, now I'd say it's more drool on me, Dicky. We're talking about Uluru, formerly known as Ayers Rock.
All right.
It's a big stone out in Australia. And it is one of Australia's most recognisable icons, along with spiders and alcoholism. The only nation on earth where they have animals on their emblem. And they fucking eat them. Huh? They eat them.
The kangaroo.
And the emu.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The emu. They ate him as well. Emu, yeah.
Did you ever eat him now?
Emu? No, never. Never did an emu. I'm hoping they had another kangaroo next year, hopefully. Did you know, speaking of emblems, Ireland is the only country in the world that has a musical instrument on its emblem.
Oh, wow.
The harp. Yeah, personally, I would have preferred a melodeon.
Would you, yeah?
Or a banjo. But I suppose the melodeon wouldn't quite inspire you to go out and die for Ireland.
It wouldn't, though, in fairness.
But this giant rock formation, Uluru, it sticks up out of the ground, right? Real unusual, like. And people used to go and climb it, right? Just for the crack, or to get away from the crocodiles, whatever. The place is fucking riddled with crocodiles. The Bible now actually says... a lot of people don't know this, but St. Patrick was actually planning to go to Australia and drive out all the crocodiles, but he got caught up in a wood outside Kildare fighting the grey squirrels.
I'm pretty sure the Bible doesn't say that.
Bastards, grey squirrels. But A lot of people don't know they missed that chapter of the Bible. But now, and the local people in Australia, the Aborigine, they believe that this giant rock is where the world began. They believe, and this is a quote now, "In the beginning, the world was unformed and featureless. Ancestral beings emerged from this void and travelled across the land, creating all life."
Wow.
And they believe this rock is the physical representation of this. Now, that might sound like pub talk, right? But think of what you learned in school. Adam and Eve, right?
Yeah.
That apple tree was a metaphor for the drink. Right. God said to Eve, "You must stay on the dry." That's how God used to talk.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Before he went to Cork, got the accent.
Okay.
Before God picked up a Cork accent. God used to say, "Eve, you must stay on the dry this weekend." Right. But Eve was a whore for the sauce. So she went to the apple tree, which was a fancy gin bar in Clonmel. And there was a handsome barman there called Tommy Snake. Right?
Tommy Snake.
And Tommy said, "How are you, Eve? You're looking well. Will you have an old can of cider?" And Eve said, "No, Tommy, I won't now. I'm on the dry." And he said, "Go on. It's from the fridge." And Eve remembered that God had told her to stay off the gat because she had a county final in the morning. But she was a sauce monger. And she drank from the apple tree. And when God found out that Eve was Langer's, he fucked her and Adam out of the Garden of Eden. And they had to go live in Carlo.
Oh.
And they had many children who all had children with each other. And that is why many people are now tick. Right? Okay. So hence, St. Patrick had his famous saying, "Wherever you go, don't bring in Egypt with you, because there'll already be one there."
Okay, I don't Amen. Know if that's attributed to St. Patrick.
That is a fact. That okay. is St. Patrick. I heard him say it.
Okay.
So the news is, this giant sacred rock, Uluru, is now closed. You can't climb it anymore. No more climbing it, right? Like, many people used to climb it, but those days are over. Like when Tara McCarthy got married. You can no longer climb Tara McCarthy, as St. Patrick used to say. But it is nice to see that they are respecting the wishes of the local people. Now, my second story of the week, I heard about a woman, a mighty woman.
Okay.
104 years old, still working, still farming. And she says she is providing for her 124 grand and great grandchildren.
Oh my God.
But they must be fucking useless. Well, it didn't say if they're working as well. It just said that she's working. I could be wrong. She has a book with all their names in it, so she can remember who's who. Isn't that amazing?
Oh my God.
I'll tell you, there'd be no getting past my grandmother. She was a serious goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd be kicking around out the back, having our game of kickball amongst ourselves.
Kickball.
Yeah, football as they call it now.
Oh my God.
And it'd be the Murphy side of the family versus the Furlongs, right?
Okay.
They're kickball. And I remember one time, I was only about 8 years old, maybe. And the sides were level. It's out the backyard now. 10 points to 1-7. And I was going through on goal for the winning score. And the grandmother came out and she kicked me right in the neck.
What is she?
She was older than me anyway. And I was being taken away in the ambulance. And the doctors weren't sure if I'd ever walk again.
Whoa.
And she got into the ambulance and she sat down beside me and whispered in my ear, "Noel, I'm still number one." Murphy's on top, bitch. And I was in a full body cast. I was in a full cast. No, I was like a mummy. Stiff as a poker, right? Uh-huh. For 7 months. And she used to call in and visit me every day for the first 3 or 4 months. After that, she kind of got tired of making fun of me.
And left you off.
Yeah, I left it off. She used to come in and she'd be doing solos with the ball around the bed. Yeah, herself and Fanny Nocton would be playing headers and volleys across the room. But very religious woman. Very religious woman. So the following Stephen's Day, I was out in my full body cast. And we were still having our friendly game of hurling out the yard. Over 50s versus the under 10s. Usual story. Mm. And the granny, I knew she'd be in goal. and we had a bit of a goal mount. Well, it wasn't really a goal mount now. It was kind of less stony than other parts of the yard, and the father used to bury dogs there. But I drenched the goal mount in water, and the frost came, and it was like an ice rink. And Granny went into goal, and then she slipped on the ice and break her neck. And she was pronounced dead on the spot. And I fucking buried the slitter in the net, right? And we won the game. Now, at her funeral, I asked if I could say a few words. And as you can imagine, I was emotional. So I walked up to the pulpit, and I got on the microphone. And I looked at the priest, and I whispered down the microphone, "Granny Murphy, I'm back on top." And, you know, some people didn't like it, but the priest said she would have respected it.
Yeah.
So, alas, you know, as St. Patrick would say, sure, if you can't have the crack. Now, this woman in Nigeria, she's 104 years of age and she's still working. Yeah. And we can't get you to do a tap.
Huh? That's true.
Now, are you working at all yet?
This is my job.
What?
Like podcasting, comedian, writing books and
fooling, you know,
that kind of stuff.
Fooling.
Doing shows, yeah.
Fooling. What time you got a real job? What age are you?
28.
Years?
Yes. No. Dog years.
28 years?
28 years of age, yeah.
I've been on sessions longer than that. This lady.
What age are you?
That's a valuable question now. A lot of people would pay money for that information.
Okay.
Yeah, including, you know, I may or may not be collecting two pensions. Let's see. This woman, Jessie Arniogwe, says that, I think that's how you pronounce her name, says the farming is a beautiful activity, in fact, and it has made her strong. And the secret to her long life has been eating local food and believing in God. So, you see, this is your problem. You be eating chips and believing in Spider-Man. Right?
I don't believe in Spider-Man.
That's going to get you nowhere in life. I've seen your pajamas, right? I can't help but feel you're going to die young with that kind of an attitude. So, respect your elders. Were you good to your grandmother?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. You killed yours.
Well, I didn't kill her. I got the better of her.
It's different, isn't it? It's
very different.
Okay.
I have no real local news now. I haven't been home. But the trick-or-treating was going for Halloween there. And I enjoyed our trick-or-treating because I make them all do a trick.
Do you?
In our party piece. Or at least I get them to do a few jobs around the farm.
I don't think that's a trick.
Well, they want something. You get nothing for nothing. So they call out and I'd start small. Young fellas would say, "Trick-or-treat." And I'd say, "How are you, lads?" "Well, young fellas, now that I have you, would you give an old man the hand?" You would. And they'd say, "Yeah, okay." And I'd say, "Do you see them calves there now? I want you to dose all them for Fluke." And don't come back to me until they're done.
Oh, my God.
And when you if you get them all done fast, there could be a toffee in it for you.
That's slave labour, that is not.
There could be a toffee in it for them. Yeah, there might be an old sucky toffee.
Oh, my God.
And would you play the old Halloween games? No, you would.
Back when I was a young lad, we would have, yeah. Bob the Apple.
Bob the Apple, yeah. The cat. All the...
I don't think we ever played.
Tip the cow. Yeah. Wrestle the goat. Okay. Mother was very good at that now.
Was she?
Ah, sure. Well, she'd be used to it from the father, but... And there was now a woman up the road from us, and she used to give out nuts. Calf nuts. She'd have a big bag inside the front door. And you'd go up and say, "Trick or treat," you know, Mrs. Halloran. And she'd say, "Put your hand in the bag now and take out a fist of calf nuts," she'd say. And I'd say, "Why don't you stop being such a senile old bitch, Mrs. Halloran?" And at Christmas, she'd give out molasses. And all sugary
stuff. You're joking
me. Yeah, I'd be feeding cattle. All sugary stuff. It was a bit... And she was tough, all right, but she was a gas woman. And she hated Father Nocton.
Go away.
Hate.
Why?
Well... She flat out refused to die until he was gone away on holiday. So do you know the way, like, some lads would be good at the riding and they'd be able to, you know, control the flow?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You'd be pumping away and you'd say, "Right, I won't explode now until the news is over." Do you know that kind of way? Well, she was able to postpone her death until the priest was away.
Wow.
That is a fact. As soon as she heard he was on the plane, dead.
Dead.
Turned off the lights. She was gone. he was gone away on a mission helping the poor people in Offaly. But she refused to die until he left the parish so that he couldn't do her funeral. She wouldn't let him get the better of her.
That's gas.
Yeah, tough woman. So just best of luck to everyone trick-or-treating or begging, as I call it.
Jesus Christ. You're harsh today.
Yeah, well, the weather is harsh. I'm going to head away now.
Yeah, you're going to do nothing interesting over in...
I'm going to the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're putting in a star for Pat Fox. Right beside Clint Eastwood, by.
That's the job, two heroes.
Two hard men of the West.
Oh, my God. Enjoy yourself. We'll see you at the show Saturday night. In LA.
Yeah, God be good, yeah.
Good man. Okay, go on.
Good luck.
Don't forget to rate, review, and tell your friends about the Two Johnnies podcast and use the hashtag #TwoJohnniesPod, that's the number two, to spread the good word according to all of us. Now, Maura, obviously, because of work commitments, couldn't make it to LA, but we tried to Skype her in. But look, technology's good, but we're just not good with technology. So unfortunately, there's no mystery topic this week, but she'll be back next week, bigger, badder, and dirtier than ever. Finally, it's Yurt and Dirt time, where we give our highlights and our lowlights of the week. I can kick us off, Johnny, this week.
Do, man.
I think we've got a double dirt.
Oh, shit, we do.
Which means it's serious, serious shit.
Oh, shit.
Double dirt this week. I think we may have touched on it before, but plain food, like food you get on a plane, is absolute shit. But you know what's worse than that? Not getting any food.
Oh, what's this, John? Tell me more.
Aer Lingus.
If you're listening,
we like you. I know. When you're on a long haul flight, you get plain food. And look, nobody's expecting fucking Gordon Ramsay job. I got a beef stroganoff. It was all right. Like, it filled me up for a couple of hours.
I got chicken depression is what I got.
Yeah, that was. Yours looked particularly bad now. And I ate it and said nothing about it. But 5-6 hours passed. And a message came up on the little television that they have on it. Don't worry, we weren't flying first class or anything. This was economy. I come up and was like, oh, have a look through our book and you can order from our hostesses. You know, so you could order food. So I opened this book anyway. And I was like, oh, there was a breakfast roll, chicken and stuff and sandwiches, ham and cheese, toasties. 7 or 8 options. So your one passed by, I said, I'll have the breakfast roll, please. She said, I don't have any of them. I said, okay, I'll have brown bread, chicken and stuff. And then, well, I don't actually have any of them either. I said, and what do you have? She said, I have a ham and cheese toastie and I have one chicken and stuffing sandwich. So you got the chicken and stuffing sandwich.
No, that was gone.
That was gone, was it?
Yeah, I had a cheese toastie as well.
So we actually had these cheese toasties and
they were solid, lad. It was 50% cement. Yeah, definitely.
There was something in it.
You know, like when the mafia kill lads, they tie these sandwiches to their legs and throw you into the Brooklyn River.
Like they were cruel now. They were like books. So we ate them anyway. But the poor fellas behind us, we'd ate the last two sandwiches.
Yeah.
And we were in row 12. Yeah. There was around 50 rows on the plane. So everyone else had to starve. So there was no food in the plane.
Yeah, crisps.
Pringles. You can't live on Pringles.
No.
How in this day and age, on an 11-hour flight, can they run out of food?
Yeah.
It was those fuckers up in first class eating it all.
It's a load of shite, like.
Yeah, we're not happy.
Food, you know what I mean? Just make a few sandwiches or something. I don't understand it. The staff were lovely, all fine Colleens.
Yeah,
but
no,
like,
the staff were great and they looked after us, but just not with food.
Food, you know what I mean?
So, Aer Lingus, if you want to make it up to us, we're flying home on next Wednesday and we have a big day on the Friday. So if you want to upgrade us to first class to make up for this, we're all right with that too. So that's our dirt of the week. Johnny, yurt.
My yurt is that I needed a few bits and over here there's a bunch of late at night. As Marty Mohn would say, late at night guitar shops. Guitar shops that stay open until 10 PM.
Yeah.
That's my dream. I just want to get jarred up and go in and try out all the instruments. And they were all so chilled out. I was asking for something. Everybody was so cool. It was like, yeah, man, you know, I think maybe we might have some of those out back. I'll go have a look. Could be one stuck somewhere. Never know.
Oh my God, I was like an episode of Family Guy.
I'm getting ASMR. I'm getting all like pins and needles. This guy was totally chilling me out.
Oh man.
You know, maybe we have one online. I was like, wow, I don't even live in America. I'm going to order it. Just
just going to order it because you're so cool.
Yeah, just keep talking.
So your yurt is the chilled out level of
late night guitar shops.
Yeah.
So handy.
That is a good idea. for all your plectrum needs.
Yeah.
My yurt of the week, I've kind of got a double one. So one real quick is, we're in an Airbnb.
Yeah.
And like normally there's a bit of, you know, to and fro and, oh, where do we collect the key, this kind of stuff. Out here, there's no front door key in our house. We've got this lovely house, hot tub, the whole lot in Airbnb. There is no front door key because there's four of us staying here. And it's so handy. There's actually a code on the door.
Mm.
And once you press in your four little digit code, the door opens. I think every house, the world through, should have this. No front door keys. Many times you lose your front door key. Can't find it, like. Oh, and then you're hiding it under a fucking flower pot, or you're hiding it up in the neighbor's attic, or wherever it is you put them.
Load of shite.
Code on the door, in you go. Way forward. My other yurt. Positive Americans. What? Like, if you walk into a coffee shop in Ireland, right, and look at someone, they'll be like, the fuck are you looking at? Right? Straight away. Whereas out here, you'd be like, hey, how are you? Or they'd say hello to you, like, good morning. You'd be like, oh, good morning. They'd be like, have a great day, man. And at first I was like, fuck off.
Be saying, have a great day. No, I will not. I'll have a shit day.
Be saying hello to me. But after a while you get used to it. And they're so positive. Everyone seems happy over here. Now it helps, it's lovely weather.
But do you ever think, are they just putting that on? Is it a bit fake?
Maybe. Maybe they're all miserable. Or maybe that shouldn't be a yurt. You're all miserable in,
like,
LA.
In restaurants, because of the tipping culture, I think people are like overly nice.
Yeah, you understand that. Like,
man, you were drinking Coke yesterday. And like, I'd say as soon as you took the glass from your mouth, they were refilling it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank God it was Coke Zero. I'd have died. I'd be a diabetic by now.
About 10 glasses. Because every time you put it down, I was like, hey lads, I'm drinking beer, you can do the same.
But the fact I had chicken wings as well, man, they were burning me.
Yeah.
So like, it was good. It was good.
So the Americans are super positive and very polite.
Mm.
Everyone polite is really well. Like, they say sir, and it's a bit formal, but nice. But I don't know if they're full of shit or if they mean it.
Yeah, let us know if you're an American listener and you know, you live in America permanently. Let us know.
Are you full of shit?
Are you positive, you know, friendly people, or are you like miserable and just putting on this massive act for the world to see? We don't know. But we're off the party because we're in Los Angeles. So that's it for this week. From me, Johnny Smacks.
From me, Johnny B.
We'll be back in Ireland with Maura next week.
For me, Maura.
We'll see you next week. Thank you. Good luck.
Good luck.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.